This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Darnalder shifts toward the near side at center. Across the line, made a move. Cuts toward the net, and a shot, and he scores! Darnell Nurse wins the game for Edmonton. They score four unanswered, erase a 4-1 deficit after two, and win here tonight 5-4 in overtime.
Our buddy Paulie Edmonds with the call. Darnell Nurse completes the collapse by the Winnipeg Jets from a 4-1 lead to a 5-4 defeat last night at the hands of the Edmonton Oilers. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues, Sean Assor and a man who is now looks at least a solid 15 years younger with that haircut.
Looking good.
The doctor of style, Ezra Ginsberg.
That's a fresh haircut.
That is a fresh haircut that your wife 100% made you get.
Correct.
Yeah. There's no way that... I don't think I've ever seen you get a haircut other than your usual haircut, which you've had the same haircut since probably grade 10.
This is a very fancy haircut.
This is a fancy haircut.
This was a 20-minute haircut.
Well, I'm going to say, what's that thing called? The Flowbee?
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Normally, you can just put the Flowbee on, or you tell the hairdresser to do whatever setting on the razor, and you go to town with your buzz cut. But this one's got style.
I go for the Dyson.
Okay. Yeah. This one's got, you might even have to put gel in your hair. Do you put gel in your hair now?
I did put a little bit of gel in my hair yesterday. Not today.
That's what I was saying. This is a handsome man on my immediate left, Mr. Ginsberg is. Let's get started talking, of course, about the Jets and the Oilers last night. It looked like the Jets were going to have one of their most complete games since the opening game against the St. Louis Blues. They had a commanding 4-1 lead after 40 minutes. Lo and behold, the Jets absolutely collapsed in the final 20 minutes, and in overtime, the Connor McDavid show leads to the Edmonton Oilers winning by a 5-4 margin.
Yeah, boys, and not only was it a 4-1 lead at one point for the Jets, after Connor McDavid made it 2-1, and then shortly after Ben Chiarot made it 3-1,
yeah,
this game had the makings of a 5-1, 6-1 Jets win.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that early goal in the third period that made it 4-2. I mean,
yeah,
that was a huge catalyst for the Oilers.
18 seconds in, Ty Ratty gets his first of the year.
Right, and it almost looked like Connor McDavid, dropped that pass for Ty Ratty. But if you look at the replay, at first I thought, Josh Morrissey just got a nice stick on Connor McDavid. But then I watched the replay, and it almost looked like Connor McDavid did that on purpose. But I think the point is the Connor McDavid, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Ty Ratty line was excellent. Let's be honest, guys. That line, and specifically Connor McDavid, took over this game. Now, I know there are a lot of Jets fans after the game yesterday and today basically saying that the sky is falling. But, if you look at the circumstances, Shawnee, leading up to this game, the Edmonton Oilers lost their first two games in Europe.
Yeah.
And then they had that big win in their third game. That was against the New York Rangers. That was last Saturday.
Yeah, they haven't had their home opener yet, the Oilers.
Well, they started the season with four road games, and they started off with an 0-2 record. And by now, you've heard Daryl Cates was in New York, and there was a lot of pressure on the Oilers to win their third game of the year. But there was also a lot of pressure, Shawnee, to win this game. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want to go back to Edmonton for your home opener with a 1-3 record. So when the Oilers went down early 3-1 and then later 4-1, you knew that the Oilers were going to have a pushback. So I don't know why there are so many people that are surprised that the Oilers tied up this game and then won it in overtime. I think it's more so coming from the standpoint of disappointment that the Jets blew that lead. But you can say whatever you want about this Oilers team. They're a desperate team, and they've still got lots of skill. I still think the Jets are a better team. But I think when you look at what happened in this game, there were some bad mistakes, but also you're talking about the best player in the world here.
Yeah, Connor McDavid is Connor McDavid, and nobody's, having Connor McDavid on your team means you can always stage a comeback like this. I think what people are upset about is that they didn't see this from the Jets last year. A 4-1 lead on home ice, with 20 minutes to go, usually meant a comfortable victory for the Winnipeg Jets. And you couple that with the fact that this Jets team really hasn't played good hockey this year. and that's being charitable. They have, I mean, the game Sunday night that they won in regulation against the Carolina Hurricanes, you can certainly say that they stole those 2 points because the Hurricanes were the better of the two teams. So I think people are upset, coupled with the victory on Sunday that they didn't, really deserve, quote unquote, plus the effort in the last 20 minutes of the game last night, leads people to say this is not the Jets team that we were so used to seeing last season, and that's why we're concerned. Just the lack of skating in the third period yesterday, and the team got so tight almost as soon as Ty Ratty scored that goal in the third period, people are wondering why they're not, playing with the same joie de vivre, let's say, that they did last season.
Well, Paul Maurice talked about it today. It's not the same team. There's a variety of veterans that aren't on the team anymore. It's a youthful roster. And people are, I think people are just assuming that the Jets would pick off right where they left off in the Western Conference Finals. That hard-hitting, tenacious group that knew their role, knew how to play their game. And that's just not the case right now. The Jets are still finding their new identity, quote-unquote, who they are on the ice. And they're working out some of the kinks in some of their lines. That second line, we saw the good and the bad out of both that second line, the Brian Little line yesterday. We saw a couple plays where they couldn't even get the puck out of the zone. And then we saw a couple really nice plays where line A and Ehlers made a couple crisscrosses through the ice. Ehlers drew in a couple players, slides it over to line A for a potential shot. So we saw the good and the bad, but you could just feel the momentum turning as soon as that first goal went in early in the third period. And then Andrew Kopp takes just a dumb retaliatory penalty. He wasn't even really hit. His arm pinned along the wall. He decides to go WWE style, slamming Drake Caggiula to the ground. And then it was just, you just knew that Edmonton was going to capitalize. And then it's a one goal game with the Oilers feeling good about themselves and Connor McDavid putting on the jet skates.
And Shawnee, the Jets definitely missed Buff last night.
Absolutely.
And teams get injuries, and that's no excuse for the Jets. But I really thought that the pairing of Ben Chiarot and Dmitry Kulikov struggled.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
And I thought Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba were solid. And I actually really liked Tyler Myers' game last night. Myers was jumping into the play. I thought he was really solid defensively. On a side note, the pairing of Matt Benning and Jason Garrison looked awful. I mean, Jason Garrison, and again, I don't want to pick on Garrison. He signed a PTO, and I understand that, at this point in his career, he's a third-pairing defenseman.
But at best.
He didn't look good either. No. So I thought that Ben Chiarot and Dmitry Kulikov struggled, and I'm not singling those guys out. I'm just saying, in Buff's absence, those two really needed to step up, that second pairing, because you know what you're going to get out of Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba. And going up against the Connor McDavid line, I mean, they're going to get their chances, Shawnee.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if McDavid gets one goal or one assist, that's almost an accomplishment. There aren't many teams that shut him out completely.
Well, this is the first time. Last night was the first time Connor McDavid had scored against the Winnipeg Jets in his career, which is, a fairly remarkable stat. And then he scored in bunches. He scored in bunches last night. I mean, to me, my biggest complaint with last night is it looked like the Jets team, not from last year, but from 2 years mm-hmm. ago. A team that's unsure of itself, a team that wilts in the face of adversity. I don't expect it to continue, but that's certainly what it looked like last night. And they didn't really start skating in that third period until after the Oilers had tied it up, and there was maybe 3 or 4 minutes to go in the third period. That's the first time you actually saw them have any sort of pulse at all in that third period, which is concerning to me.
And Drew, even though some old habits might have been creeping back into the Jets game, it goes back to what I said before. I mean, you have to remember how desperate this Oilers team is, and you have to remember how skilled they are. It's not just Connor McDavid. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is a first overall pick. Jesse Puljujarvi is a fourth overall pick. Kyler Yamamoto is a good young player. I thought he got better as the game progressed. I thought Ryan Strome actually on that third line also got better as the game progressed. It's not just a one-player team. I realize that McDavid is getting the majority of the goals here, but I thought that you saw as the game progressed, as I mentioned, I think some of the other players on the bottom line started to pick it up. And this is a team that has skill. I mean, you can debate all day long whether or not you think the Oilers are going to be a playoff team. They have to get more secondary scoring. But the point is, they have other talented players aside from McDavid.
But
this isn't a bottom five team in the league.
But to your point about their desperation, I think if the Jets I mean, the Oilers are certainly desperate, and they're going to step on the gas as much as they possibly can. If the Jets play just a little bit better than absolutely awful in the third period, I don't think the Oilers can stage the comeback that they did. Just that the Jets played that poorly, it allowed the Oilers and their, you know, their extra desperation to take over the game, where I don't think you saw that last season.
We saw some very uncharacteristic things yesterday. We saw turnovers in the neutral zone that feed the transition game of the Oilers, something that they rely on heavily, especially when Connor McDavid is on the ice, because if you turn the puck over, he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're flat-footed as a D-man, we saw it yesterday, you are screwed. Screwed.
Yeah. Doesn't matter who you are on the defense.
A couple plays really stand out to me. Brandon Tanev tries to dangle at the blue line. I think it was around Jesse Puljujärvi and gets stripped, and there's a chance when they're down a goal. And Nikolaj Ehlers, a backhand sauce pass on the power play. Blue line to blue line. Leon Draisaitl picks it off. They start going the other way. Ehlers has to bust his butt to get back. Just mistakes that compounded, and that eventually you'll just end up digging yourself into a hole if you continue to make those mistakes. And they continue to, and then when it was before they knew it, it was a tie game. It just kind of imploded on them, and Blake Wheeler said it himself. He's like, you know, you don't even notice Connor McDavid on the ice early in the game. He's got a goal already, and then all of a sudden he can just take over.
Let's hear from Andrew Kopp. He spoke after Jets practice today, and he talked about the intensity on the Jets bench during last night's contest.
Our bench hasn't been as good, so I think trying to get some fun and have a lot of talk going is going to be paramount for these next couple weeks.
What do you mean by that, your bench hasn't been as good?
We've just been quieter. I think, you know, when you go through the ups and downs of a playoff, everyone's, you know, so into it, so dialed in, and, you know, our bench is wired, and there's a lot of talk, and there's just a vibe on the bench that we haven't had to start the year. For the most part. So I think we got to get that going again. I think, you know, that's kind of to a man just talking about nothing, honestly. It's just getting that positivity and that jam and just trying to show how wired you are. And then that kind of just gets the whole bench wired. So not that it's anything groundbreaking of, you know, seeing a play here and there. It's just literally yelling whatever that comes to your mind that's positive and kind of gets the guys going in just terms of showing that everyone your intensity level and how dialed in you are on every day, every night.
When we come back, I want to talk about Andrew Kopp's comments. I want to talk about the weight of expectations. Mm-hmm. Are the Jets feeling the pressure related to the fact that they are one of the Stanley Cup favorites? Can that maybe explain the sluggish start to the 2018-19 NHL season? You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I've been through it and watched it, you know, and played close attention to Edmonton last year and Ottawa last year, and are very aware, especially with a young group, how we handle our play.
From Monday's post-practice scrum, Jets head coach Paul Maurice talking about the weight of expectations and talking about what the Edmonton Oilers and the Ottawa Senators went through last season. Remember, both those teams had been playoff teams the year before, and then last year, when they had the weight of expectations on them, both teams absolutely collapsed into really bad situations in both Edmonton and Ottawa. Jets obviously still off to a 3-2-1 start to the season, so it's not like the roof is caving in completely, but you definitely get the impression that this team is tight, that this team is nervous, and this team is not playing with the same confidence that you saw for the majority of last year. Welcome back to NHL This Week, this segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, you can get Bernstein's delivered straight to your house, straight to your office, straight to wherever you need it to be. Just go to shopbernsteins.com. Check out their website, citywide delivery, freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your door from our good friends at Bernstein's Deli. So you heard from Andrew Kopp, you heard from Paul Maurice. How much weight do you put into the argument that expectations and the pressure is having an impact on the Jets through the first six games this season?
Right. The Oilers, I think, are probably the better comparable than the Ottawa Senators, and I think they're better comparable because of the youth on the team.
Sure.
Right? And when you're talking about the Ottawa Senators and the players that they had, I think it's a much more talented group, right? You're talking about the Erik Karlssons and the Craig Andersons and the Kyle Turris's from 2 years ago, but I think this Jets team is still learning how to deal with these expectations. They've never been in this position before.
No.
The Winnipeg Jets have never been a Stanley Cup contender. And that's going back to the Jets 1.0, by the way. I mean, the Dale Hawerchuk, Thomas Steen Winnipeg Jets, I mean, they were good teams, but they were never considered Stanley Cup contenders. I think the Jets right now, and you mentioned the confidence, I think this is a huge issue for the team. When you listen to what Paul Maurice said, and, you know, for those of you who haven't listened to the clip that you're referring to, it's from yesterday.
No, Paul Maurice is from Monday.
Sorry, Monday. Two days ago.
Before the game, but it was right after Monday's practice.
Right, and so he's talking about the veterans that they lost in the offseason. So you're talking about guys like Toby Enstrom. You're talking about guys like Matt Hendricks. You're talking about Sean Mathias. I would throw in even a Steve Mason in there, because Lauren Brossoit, at 25 years old, is significantly younger than a guy like Steve Mason, who has much more NHL experience. He referenced five players around 30 years of age or older. So what he's referring to is it's a younger team, and it was a young team last year. And when you consider, guys, that Nikolai Ehlers is struggling right now offensively, mm-hmm. Jack Roslovic only has one assist in six games, Christian Vesalainen was a healthy scratch yesterday, he only had 1 point in his first five games. And again, I'm not saying that these players are necessarily playing bad. All I'm saying is when you consider that there's a lot of pressure on these players that they're putting on themselves, I think that makes a group a little bit tight. And I think you've seen that at times early on in the season. I wouldn't agree with you, Drew, that this team has been playing without confidence through the first six games. But I think when you're talking about certain periods of games, especially last night, I mean, last night the Jets weren't able to shut it down. That was not a team that was playing with confidence. I mean, you got the feeling after the Oilers made it 4-3 that that tying goal was coming.
Well, the difference is, Ezzy, and I want to get Sean in on this, the difference is, and we talked about this in the first segment, last year when the Jets had a 4-1 lead, even if they gave up a goal, or they even gave up two goals to let the other team come within one, they weren't getting the opposition wasn't getting that tying goal. They just weren't. You never felt as though a game was going to slip away to that effect. Last night, Ty Ratty scores 18 seconds in, and you felt like it could slip away and that it was going to slip away. Lo and behold, it did. Lo and behold, of course, Darnell Nurse wins it in overtime for the Oilers. It's just I don't know if it's strictly a confidence issue. I don't know if it's I mean, you heard Andrew Kopp. Andrew Kopp said the bench is quiet. The bench is not as vocal. They're not as loose as they were last year. I mean, when you have Andrew Kopp, you know, saying that, I think there's certainly... certainly you have to take that with a pretty good grain of salt, you know, or you have to validate those comments as pretty legitimate, because that's a guy who's on the bench talking about it, saying we're not where we were last year. And how do they get there, especially having lost all that veteran presence, and especially with younger players being asked to step up and maybe not being as vocal? I'm not sure. I don't know how you get over that hump. And I think that's what the Jets are struggling to do right now.
You want to know how you get over the hump?
Win.
You win.
Yeah.
That cures everything. Winning cures all. Winning loosens the hands. It quickens the feet. It sharpens the mind. To me, it looks like they're struggling to find their game. And I'm referring mostly to the little line at Ehlers line, but I'm also, you can see it kind of on that fourth line, that Roslovic line, where it's guys, you're watching guys trying to figure it out. Guys that won't look left and right and know which way to go. They're trying to process as it's happening, and that just comes with reps and game time and experience. But unfortunately, it's the regular season, and we're 6 games in right now. We're approaching 10 pretty quickly. They've got to figure it out and figure it out quickly, or else lineup changes could be made.
Well, they have made one lineup change, of course, with Vasilainen now being up.
I also
up
liked
in the...
Lemieux's game. I thought he added a nice little element of sandpaper. We didn't see too much of him, but he looked a little more, like I said, sure than Vasilainen, who you could watch literally try to figure it out as it's happening.
And Paul Maurice is in a bit of a difficult situation, because you obviously don't want to press any sort of panic button, because it's not at that point in time by any stretch.
No.
But at the same time, you have to get more than just Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler and Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp going. I mean, the other two lines have been relatively insignificant, especially 5-on-5. So, I mean, from my perspective, and I'm just a humble man on the radio talking to you folks, is it's time to do something to shuffle these lines, to try and inject some enjoyment into the team. They just don't seem like they're enjoying themselves right now. Last year, I don't think there were very many games where you could say that they were sort of miserable looking out there.
And I think one of the hardest things, guys, is for a team that went to the Western Conference Finals last year, I think now they're the team that other teams know that they have to elevate their game to beat,
mm-hmm.
right? So a couple mm-hmm. of years back, right, it was the Jets that had to elevate their game to beat the Edmonton Oilers. Well, we're going to face Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and we're going to have to face Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Cam Talbot. He just came off of a 40-win season. Obviously, I'm talking about 2 years ago,
Two years ago, yeah.
So now the Jets are in a different position. Now other teams are gunning for them.
The Jets
That's unfamiliar territory.
The Jets are the benchmark
exactly.
team.
Exactly. Right. The Jets are the team that other teams come into comparing themselves, saying, we have to elevate our game to this level.
I think there's less, Shawnee, sorry to interrupt you. Less of an element of surprise with this team. And what I mean by that is mm-hmm. I think, you know, last year, even though it was Lyonnais' second year and it was Ehlers' third year, you had Kyle Connor, he was a rookie, and you had Jack Roslovic coming onto the team midway through the season after Mark Scheifele was injured. It's more so not the individual surprise, it's the team surprise. The Jets' speed, skill, and physicality caught a lot of teams off guard last year. Right. Now teams know what to expect from the Jets.
Absolutely.
And by the way, I think the Jets, you know, I'm going to put this one on the board. I think the Jets are going to beat the Canucks big tomorrow, and I think you're going to see more from the second and third lines.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't know. I don't.
I think they're going to be angry tomorrow against Vancouver after what happened last night.
I hope so.
Well, they should be angry mm-hmm. given their performance, but I'm not sure that they're through the woods on this. I mean, I'm really not. And quickly, you know, before you know it, 6 games becomes 10 games, and 10 games becomes 15 games, and 15 games become 20 games, and all of a sudden you're the Oilers from last year. I'd be surprised.
Yeah, but we're a long way from 15 or 20 games. We're at 7 games right now.
Yeah, I know. Seventh game is tomorrow. But I mean, it does spiral out of control pretty quickly, and a snowball.
Well, it hasn't yet.
I know it can, and it hasn't.
I mean,
they're
3 points out of first in the Central.
Yeah, but they're 3-2-1, and they haven't played good hockey aside from that first game in St. Louis. And
I thought they were pretty good against LA.
Yeah, fine. Okay, I'll grant you that one. But I mean, you haven't seen them be as sharp as people would want, and I don't know necessarily what, you know, how the switch flips to become sharp like they were last year.
It definitely has not been a great start to the season. I wouldn't say it's been a bad start to the season. I would say it's been okay.
And I mean,
you're 500, right? You said it. You're 3-2-1. You've won half of your games,
yeah.
And I think you've had some good periods and you've had some bad periods, and I agree with you. The Jets' first game against St. Louis was great. Second game against Dallas was not great.
Yeah.
The home opener I really liked. I didn't love the Carolina game. I thought they gave up way too many shots, and Lauren Brossoit had to make some big save. So I'd say maybe 3 of the 6 games I've liked.
I would say that the start has been bad. The results have been good, or the results have been better, but the play on the ice and the performance itself has not been anywhere close to the level that I think the fans have expected mm-hmm. and the level that the Jets themselves have expected.
Well, maybe that's the problem. Maybe the Jets and fans just expected to come into this season and to just pick up right where they left off last spring, and everything would be all sunshine and rainbows. But unfortunately, it's a very, very long season. It's a tough grind, the NHL regular season. And if you look around the league, there's some pretty interesting teams at the top of some divisions. So it's craziness happening all over the NHL.
I just think, Shawnee, we can't get too up and too down from game to game. I mean, if the Jets put up a 7-2 victory tomorrow over Vancouver, and I'm not saying that's going to happen, even though I do think they are going to win tomorrow, especially with no Elias Pettersson in the lineup for Vancouver, I mean, we're not going to be talking about this. Everybody's going to be excited again. And then if they beat Arizona, now all of a sudden you're 5-2-1. You're second in the Central. So I agree with you, Drew. There are some concerns, but the season is early, and I think they have to dig deep, and they have to come out with a full 60 minutes tomorrow night.
I was just going to say really quickly, I feel like this is like a double worst loss just because of the way it happened, the way it kind of transpired. We kind of feel a little worse today just based on if it would have been.
Well, sure. If you lose, if it's a back and forth game and you lose in overtime because it's 1-0, then it's 1-1, and then it's 2-1, then it's mm-hmm. 2-all, then it's a different feeling than it was an unmitigated collapse.
What about the fact that Gretzky was in the building?
He almost
had this eerie feeling like we flashed back to the mid 1980s, late 90s. 1980s when Gretzky used to always come into town and absolutely kill the Jets.
Well, that guy named McDavid is a pretty good facsimile to that Wayne Gretzky guy. I mean, McDavid is just incredible, and we got to see it last night as they came back to beat the Jets by that 5-4 margin. When we come back, we shift our focus to tomorrow night's contest against the Vancouver Canucks. Patrick Johnston, who covers the Canucks for Post Media, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Wednesday evening. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You're listening to TSN 1290. You can always follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Post Media in Vancouver, he covers the Vancouver Canucks. We're pleased to welcome to the program Patrick Johnston. Patrick, good evening, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me on. Calling on the hotline makes it sound like it's an emergency.
Well, anytime we call one of our guests, we consider it an emergency. We need to hear from them just that badly.
It's great to be here. Thanks for calling me.
Our pleasure, Patrick. Thanks for joining us to talk about the Canucks. The Canucks and Jets, of course, doing battle tomorrow evening at Bell MTS Place, a game you can hear on TSN 1290. Patrick, obviously got to start with the start to the season for the Canucks. If you told most Canucks fans that the Canucks would be 4-2 after six games to start the year, I think they would take that, and I think they'd be pleasantly surprised with the performance of the Canucks thus far.
I think that's exactly it. You know, obviously getting three wins off three pretty good teams, although I guess Florida's disappointed with their start, but a win off Tampa and a win in Pittsburgh last night. It's a team that's, yeah, they've been doing good things, and at least, you know, I mean, we came into the season hoping at least it'd be fun. No real high expectation, I'd say, and so far they've delivered, that's for sure.
Patrick, I wanted to ask you about Bo Horvat. You had a really good article for the Vancouver Province talking about face-offs and specifically the influence that Manny Malhotra has had on Bo Horvat. Bo Horvat's obviously one of the, you know, the Canucks' top young snipers. Can you just talk about the influence that not only Malhotra's had on Horvat, but the entire Canucks group of centers?
Yeah, it was a really interesting conversation. You know, you sit there and you're kind of poking around and you know, tail end of a road trip and you're trying to think about what's the story here. Obviously, Elias Pettersson being injured was a story, but you're trying to find other things. And I couldn't help but notice, you know, some of the things that Horvat was doing better at faceoffs. He actually came into the NHL and was a plus 50% faceoff guy. And, you know, not every faceoff matters as much as another, as I note in the story. But, he has found himself as becoming one of the more, kind of, I would say, underrated guys at the draw in the NHL. And he pointed directly to Manny Malhotra's influence. Malhotra, of course, retired from hockey as a player in 2016. And then almost quite quickly, actually, was kind of pulled in by the Canucks because he lives in Vancouver and obviously has a great reputation for being a guy in faceoffs. And, yeah, Manny was a huge influence on the Canucks even in 2016-17, you know, working with the centers they had that year, easily adding, I think it was something like 5% to their win percentage just across the board. And, you know, he talked to me when I talked to him about it after Bo mentioned it, was that, you know, there's two things he sees in Horvat. One is just pure strength. He's grown up, 23 now, and it's his fifth year in the league. Manny basically drew the same parallel. He got into the league as an 18-year-old and said, listen, I didn't really figure it out until it was my fifth year in the league when he was in Dallas. Talked about being in Dallas and learning almost in the sort of Guy Carbonneau school of faceoffs. And Carbonneau wasn't there anymore, but he talked about the influence that still was there. Guys like Mike Modano, who was there, and other guys, and just how they bared down and in practice would be, you know, basically hammering on your sticks. And he realized this was how serious they took it. They just got really focused in on what the fundamentals are, how you can use your leverage, how you can learn what other guys are doing. None of it's especially mind-blowing, I suppose, when you think about how guys like that are going to research what other their opposition's doing. But, yeah, it was just kind of trying to understand the techniques and how to understand, you know, what your own strengths are and your own weaknesses are. And Horvat's been a successful story over the last couple of years, and already this year has done really well. He's almost 60% on his draws, especially in some crucial moments. So you know, the power play is a huge element of that, and he takes the main draws on the power play, and that's been part of their story so far.
Patrick, do you see this as a year that potentially Jake Virtanen can work his way in as a regular on the Canucks roster moving forward?
I mean, I'd say he's a regular. It depends on what you think of regular meaning. He's found a role so far on the third line with Brandon Sutter, and right now they got Antoine Roussel, and that's been an interesting line. Virtanen came into the league, obviously, with big rep from the WHL. He scored all these goals, but one thing we've sort of realized, and I think he's still figuring out, is that he's a big guy. He's a great skater, and when he was coming up in the dub, he was essentially more physically mature than his peers, and he used that to great effect. He'd pull away from defensemen. He scored a lot of goals on the breakaway, and then you come to the NHL, and everyone is as big and as strong and as good a skater as you, and so he's, you know, it took some time to get adjusted to that, and I'd say now he understands his game a lot better. Travis Green has worked really hard with him the last couple of years. Obviously, he had him a little bit in Utica two seasons ago, and then he had him last year. And, you know, Virtanen as a sort of a puck carrier up the boards, incredibly effective player. The issue becomes what happens once he gets in the zone. He has a tendency to not drive the net, take a shot from the outside. He actually often, you know, has said he likes doing that, and that's fine. But, you know, is it the most effective play? Not necessarily. So they've got him now. He's swooping around a bit more, looking to distribute back into the slot. And obviously that's an effective pass. He can make it work. And so that's what he's focused on. He's got a couple goals, but I mean, also one of them was an empty netter. And, you know, he's a player that he clearly has proved that he's an NHLer. Question now becomes is, you know, what is, you know, how much more is there and, you know, how consistent can he be in his work? And I would say that was the biggest learning curve for him coming into the league. And that I think was the biggest development last year. Travis Green really was like, listen, Jake, you know, you're a physical, you can be a physical presence every shift you're on the ice. You need to learn how to regulate that and how to sort of drive that forward. It doesn't have to, we need bursts every once in a while. We want some consistent power. And he's still figuring that out, but he's definitely getting a regular role. And, you know, the other day he was on the ice late in the game protecting the lead. And that was a clear statement from his coach that he liked what he was doing. And that certainly in terms of, you know, protecting his team's goal, he's done a good job of that. It's all about, like I said, putting it together offensively. And, you know, he's got the tools. Can he assemble it all?
You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290. Our guest is Patrick Johnston. He covers the Vancouver Canucks for Post Media on Canada's West Coast. Patrick, two-part question. Anders Nielsen and Jacob Markstrom have split the starts so far this year. Who do you expect to see in net for the Canucks tomorrow night? And why has Nielsen been so successful when Markstrom has struggled so immensely?
I wouldn't say Markstrom struggled immensely. He did have a tough start in Carolina a week ago, and they had said, you know, Travis Green said that they had scheduled Anders Nielsen to start last Thursday. That was always going to be his start, you know. So in that sense, I would say it's going to be Nielsen. He's pulled off three excellent starts in a row, did really well in all three places. You know, he's probably having a little bit of luck there, but in terms of his technique and composure, he's really calm. And has made some really big saves and hasn't made them look difficult. And I would say to the degree that, in fact, that people don't even realize how tough some of those saves were. You know, he's had a lot of help, I would say, right now in terms of how the defensemen have been boxing out. He's been seeing a lot of shots, and the defensemen themselves have been blocking a lot of shots. Now, you know, obviously, in the long run, want to end up blocking shots all the time because that means you don't have the puck. But so far, they've been making it work. And you know, they're trying to build things out. They've got three different defense pairs that are doing three different things in terms of what their responsibilities are. Edler and Tanev have been carrying the defensive load and have had surprisingly a hard time getting out of their own end. But Pouliot and Stetcher have been doing a really nice job in terms of their two-way game. And Ben Hutton and Erica Branson had their best games of the year last game. But to go back to Nielsen, yeah, I mean, he's a big goalie. He's one of the league's biggest guys. He's 6'6". And Ian Clark, who was brought in as the goalie coach this year, had been with the Canucks before, had been with Columbus, a great reputation in the game. He's been really working with Nielsen in terms of two things. It's what Nielsen's told me. One of them is in terms of him just trying to keep a little more upright, the best way to put it, and then have his arms a little bit tighter, I mean, which is a reaction, obviously, to the change in goaltender equipment this year. And yeah, he said basically when he's been feeling good, feeling right, he's been turning them all away. I mean, the two goals on Tuesday by the Penguins, one was a shot that essentially got under his arm, and he said, yeah, I got my arm out too wide. And the second goal, you know, he didn't have much of a chance on. It was a great pass from Phil Kessel to Carl Hagelin on the doorstep and on a two-on-one. And you know what? I mean, he there's not much a goalie can do in that circumstance. He's been doing really well, and I think there's every reason to think he's going to start tomorrow.
Patrick, Drew asked you about the Canucks' start to the season earlier, and you know it's been a nice start to the season. The Canucks are 4-2, and you know Brock Besser got the big overtime winner the other night against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Wanted to ask you, has that changed Canucks fans' long-term expectations of this team? I think you'd agree that even though the Vancouver Canucks are off to that nice start, mm-hmm. I don't think the Canucks think they're a Stanley Cup contender. When the fans look at Elias Pettersson and they look at Brock Besser and Bo Horvat and Quinn Hughes is next in line to join mm-hmm. the Canucks, do Canucks fans, do you think, see the light at the end of the tunnel and realize even though the team isn't very good this year or maybe even next year, that 2 or 3 years from now, this team is going to be pretty damn good?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think there is a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, I mean, the question, of course, is how strong is that light? They've definitely got some good players already in the mix. You mentioned Pettersson, and obviously his concussion was a real shock. And I think, you know, I think people maybe did get some sense. I'm not sure if people got the true sense of it, but people were really upset by what happened to him on Saturday in Florida. Mike Bouncing thrown him to the ice, and Pettersson's out. And you never want to see a young player get hurt, especially not when it involves their brain. So people are worried about that because he's been so exciting. There hasn't been a player quite this exciting, I would say, you know, in terms of their debut, honestly, since Pavel Bure in terms of results. I mean, obviously the Sedins always had buzz with them, but you know, they took a while to kind of find their way in the NHL. Pavel Bure right off the bat was such a electric force and a guy that people wanted to come see. So, you know, Pettersson had that one game, obviously great goal against Calgary in the season opener, and then they've been on the road since. So to not have him coming back, I think, is going to be a frustration. People have certainly been voicing that. But at the same time, they're hopeful he's going to recover because they know that he's sort of the beginning of this promised wave of young players. And they've got a few other guys that the team's high on in the minors. They're like, you know, any prospect, they still got to pan out. But one of them right now, Adam Gaudette, is getting some NHL time because of Pettersson's injury. You mentioned Quinn Hughes. People are obviously very excited about him, and you know he's going to be, you know, I mean, the expectation is that he'll probably be in the mix next year, and that'll be fabulous. You know, so that there's a core they're building, but like we've seen with so many other teams, cough, cough, the Oilers, you know, it's not just about finding the stars, it's about finding the mid-tier players. And I think, the critical eye says, listen, they still have work to do in terms of finding the rest of the roster. The defense is the same as it was last year, and the defense was not very good last year in terms of producing points or even preventing, you know, rushes and that sort of thing. They've changed things up this year, which is good. And like I said, things have been exciting anyway, and I think people are feeling good about this because last year was a tough year. There wasn't, I mean, other than the Sedins' sort of dramatic end to their careers, there wasn't a whole lot to be excited about last year. Brock Besser and Bo Horvat again are showing well, and they're both good, solid young players. But yeah, I'd say there is light at the end of the tunnel. I think people are hopeful that it's very bright, and you know, we'll see how things play out.
Patrick, one guy who always seems like a very intriguing player whenever I watch whatever limited Canucks we get to watch up mm-hmm. here is Nikolai Goldobin, and he mm-hmm. looked to really be developing some chemistry with Elias Pettersson before the injury. How's he looked early in the season, and maybe what does he need to do to kind of take his game to the next level?
He's really come a long way, I'd say. When he arrived from San Jose, there was sort of a, you know, high skill, but you know, was the sort of intensity always there, similar to Vertanen, and the ability to kind of maintain a consistency from shift to shift. You didn't need the peaks and valleys. You know, you wanted the better, higher average on the whole. And, you know, he's a player that clearly has skill and, as you said, had already meshed really well with Pettersson. He did some good stuff. They didn't play a lot. That line essentially became the fourth line on Tuesday in Pittsburgh with Gaudette as a center and Louis Erickson, who's obviously on a big contract and has mostly been a disappointment in terms of his offensive production. I think, you know, he still does lots of great things well as a hockey player, but, you know, he's being paid to score goals, and that's not been something that's worked for him the last you know, the two seasons he's been in Vancouver. But yeah, Goldobin is he's an interesting player. He certainly creates stuff. He meshed so well with Pettersson, I would say, that it is disappointing again to see Pettersson out, because he kind of, you know, he doesn't know Adam Gaudet all that well. He knows Eriksson well enough, but they're both on opposite sides of the ice. And Goldobin's a guy that likes, he's not a, you know, breakaway speedy player, but he does love to vary his speed and cut inside and create some space and try to find, you know, teammates that are rushing on. And you know, in the end, he's an interesting player, but he's very much a player that, you know, it's all about who he's playing with. He can make great things happen with great players, but he's not your number one guy. That shouldn't be misunderstood.
Patrick, is it Pettersson or Pettersson? Because Pierre LeBrun was on our station the other day, and he said that it's Pettersson.
Well, the Swedish pronunciation would be basically Pettersson. But the Canucks did quite a funny video, I would say, because there was a bit of a joke going around about how to pronounce his name, so they did kind of a fun video on all the guys trying to pronounce his name, and then they asked him, and he sort of said, well, it's Elias, and then he sort of went with his Canadian accent and said he's happy with Pettersson. So it's kind of up to you guys. I think those of us in the media, we're kind of trying to stick with Pettersson, but I suspect we're going to end up where he wants to, where he said anyway. We'll see. So yeah, go with what you prefer.
Petey.
Yeah, we'll just go call him Petey.
Yeah. Yeah, his teammates are all calling him Petey. So yeah, Deaky Pete has been a nickname that some of the media have been throwing around too.
Last question for you, Patrick, and we appreciate your time this evening. It was only a few weeks ago that Patrick Laine made his comments, I can't believe I'm asking you about this, about the Canucks Fortnite ban, and Brandon Sutter really seemed to be offended by Laine's comments. Are the Canucks possibly using that as bulletin board material ahead of tomorrow night's game?
You know what? It's one of those ones that honestly, like, it sort of come up early in training camp. Bill Zotto had talked a little bit about it. And, you know, I was kind of one of those ones, I'd say most of us had kind of dropped in. We're like, yeah, whatever, you know, players do what they want. You know, your pals at TSN 1040, you know, I honestly do their credit, because it had been a question that we kind of dropped. And they asked Bo Horvat about it, and Bo said, "No, we're gonna ban video games on the road," which seems like a tough thing to ban, given everybody has a phone. But essentially, the principle was they didn't want to get, you know, they figured, let's not carry our consoles around and be hanging out in the rooms. Let's go do stuff. Let's get out. Let's be a little more active. And you know what? I mean, I'm kind of ambivalent about the whole thing. I you know, there's obviously lots of arguments in favor of guys developing their fine motor skills playing video games, but there's also arguments against it. And, you know what? To be honest, I couldn't tell you. We haven't been talking about it, that's for sure. I think the players have been, I would assume they've moved past that. I mean, it was a discussion. They were even kind of surprised it was even a story, to be perfectly honest, when we all kind of showed up the next day and started asking them about it. And they sort of went, well, you know, I mean, this is just something that we're doing for now, and we're going to see how it goes. And, you know, I mean, I think honestly, it's probably not a big deal. They certainly wouldn't be saying Line A took our video games away from us. So I'm not quite sure how they'd be able to spin it as a rivalry thing. I mean, I think in the end, they look at this Winnipeg team and they say, this is a big, tough challenge. You know, and we just want to beat them. They'll point to the three wins they're coming off and they say, listen, you keep playing like that, we're going to beat anybody. And they know how strong and powerful the Jets are. And I think they're going to feel upbeat going into this game tomorrow night.
Well, it should be a good tilt. Patrick Johnston covers the Vancouver Canucks for Post Media in Vancouver. Patrick, appreciate your time and insight this evening. We'll see you at the rink tomorrow night.
Thanks, all.
Take care. When we come back, a bunch of the Canadian teams are off to a surprising start. The Canucks, the Senators, the Habs. We'll talk about which of those starts is most surprising, and can any of them keep it up? You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Smiles all over on the bench as the Ottawa Senators put up a real nice win here tonight. And it started in net with Craig Anderson, who made 37 saves tonight. Just sharp right from the drop of the puck, and the Senators were strong in front of them, and the kids come to play tonight.
The Ottawa Senators off to a surprisingly good start. They, alongside the Montreal Canadiens and the Jets' opponent tomorrow night, the Vancouver Canucks, certainly unpleasant starts to the season for fan bases that really had minimal expectations. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mindell, Sean Asore, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So of those three teams I just mentioned, the Canucks, they're 4-2, the Habs, they're 3-1-1, and the Senators have the same record as the Jets at 3-2-1. Which of those three teams is most surprising to you?
I'll tell you who I think is going to be the team that does the best out of those three. For me, probably all three of these teams have been surprising.
Sure.
Because I didn't have any of these teams making the playoffs this year, Drew, and it's obviously only after 5 or 6 games. So, I mean, there's a lot of season to be played here. I looked at the next 5 or 6 games for all three of these teams.
Research.
And Brady Tkachuk, it was just announced today.
Yes, out of the lineup for the next month.
Right, and he joins a laundry list of players who are out of the lineup for the Senators. Marian Gaborik hasn't played a game this year. J.G. Pageau's probably going to miss the whole year. Ryan Zingel, he's actually off to a good start. He's out with a lower body injury. Cody Ceci, a top four defenseman for them, he's out of the lineup. Alex Fermentin, he's a rookie. He's out of the lineup with post-concussion syndrome. The Ottawa Senators' next 5 games are on Saturday versus Montreal, Tuesday versus Boston, Friday at Colorado, Sunday at Vegas, and Tuesday at Arizona. 3 of their next 5 games are against teams that made the playoffs last year. Now, when you look at the Montreal Canadiens schedule, their next six games, I won't go through all of them. They've got St. Louis tonight. Yeah. And as I mentioned, they play the Ottawa Senators this Saturday. Calgary, Buffalo, Boston, Dallas.
My favorite part is you just said you weren't going to mention them all.
Only one of their next 6 games, Drew, is against teams that made the playoffs last year.
So you think the Habs have a better chance of keeping this streak going because they have the easier schedule?
Well, it's the schedule coupled with their injuries. Shea Weber's the only player that's injured right now, a significant player. You've got a Nick DeLaurier and David Schlemko. Those are depth guys.
Yeah.
That's a fourth-line forward and a depth defenseman in Schlemko. Shea Weber is going to come back to the lineup pretty soon, so they're going to get healthier with their captain. I mentioned it earlier. I thought Montreal was the best of these three teams anyways. I mean, Ottawa, I think, has a good chance at finishing last overall in the entire league and then not getting Jack Hughes. Colorado, of course, has their pick, so it could be the first overall pick. But when I'm looking at these three teams, Vancouver, we talked about they play Winnipeg tomorrow night. You've got Boston, Washington, Vegas, Arizona, and Pittsburgh coming up. 5 of their next 6 games are against teams that made the playoffs last year. So the Vancouver Canucks don't have a very easy schedule coming up. So if I'm basing it on injuries and schedule, and you know we should mention, along with Elias Pettersson, Jay Beagle, he's going to be out of the lineup for 6 weeks, and that's a pretty significant injury for them. He plays on their third line.
Yeah, they're paying them a lot of money.
The Canucks have injuries and a tough schedule. The Senators have tough schedule and a lot of injuries. So if I'm looking at these three teams, I think Montreal has the best shot at keeping this going, but I still don't think they're going to be a playoff team. I still have all three of these teams missing the playoffs.
Sean, quickly?
I got to agree with my man, Ezzy. I mean,
do you want to reconsider that?
Maybe.
Okay.
I'll think about it at the break. But you just look at, the list, that laundry list of injuries, it's so daunting. And you just figure that has to catch up with the Ottawa Senators, Vancouver Canucks. You talk about their lack of experience and maybe the schedule, maybe that could turn on them. But the Montreal Canadiens, I can't believe the early success they're having right now. They're allowing goals, but they're scoring goals as well. +5 differential. I mean, it's impressive. Thomas Tatar leading the team in points right now. I mean, if Carey Price can keep him in games and they can score goals, I mean...
Yeah, Carey Price is the big wild card there.
Mm-hmm. Well, wild card, but also, of these three teams, he's the only ace in the hole, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Carey Price, even though...
Best player on the all
Habs,
three teams?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's still, in my opinion, a top 5 goalie in the league. And Craig Anderson, I think, has done an admirable job. His numbers have actually been really good for Ottawa. But obviously, we talked about Vancouver. I mean, they don't really have a number one goalie this year.
That's, yeah, like we said, they're splitting the starts like they have been thus far between Markstrom and Nielsen. Another team that's been a surprise early on in the season are the Chicago Blackhawks. We're going to head to Chicago after these commercial messages to talk to Jimmy Greenfield of the Chicago Tribune about the Blackhawks and their undefeated start to the season. You're listening to NHL This Week, hour number 2, coming up next on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio, that's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Chicago Tribune, we're pleased to welcome to the program Jimmy Greenfield. Jimmy covers the Chicago Blackhawks, who are another one of those teams off to a surprising start to the season. Jimmy, good evening, and thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Jimmy, Blackhawks, most people had pegged for being one of the bottom-feeding teams in the Central Division. A lot of people thought they would replicate the disappointment of last season. Thus far, pretty good, though. 3-0-2, undefeated, one of only two undefeated teams, at least in regulation, they alongside the New Jersey Devils. How would you evaluate the Blackhawks' start to the season thus far?
I'd say it's promising, but you got to be cautious because they could easily be 0-5, 0-5, 5-0-0, however you want to put it. Every one of the games obviously is gone to overtime, and deservedly so. You know, there's been no lead or deficit more than two goals. They've had 2-0 leads in the last three games that they've blown. They've blown third period leads routinely. They've come back routinely. You know, it's more the hallmark of a 500 team than a team that's taken 8 of 10 points. But nevertheless, you have 8 of 10 points. And, you know, it's hard to say exactly which direction they're going to go, but it's a good start.
Jimmy, you wrote about this today for the Chicago Tribune. It looks like there's a chance that Corey Crawford could return to the lineup tomorrow night against the Arizona Coyotes. And it's hard to believe, and you mentioned this in the article, Corey Crawford hasn't played since last December 2017. Is this just the best timing for Corey Crawford to return, considering that the Hawks are off to this good start and they want to keep it going?
Yeah, you know, they targeted this date a couple of weeks ago. It's when Joel Quenneville first mentioned it to us. And a couple of things made it a good possible date. First of all, they haven't played since Saturday. So the team has had a break, and you have a rested team. They've been able to work and practice and prepare for this. And the second thing is you have a team that isn't scoring a lot of goals. So, you know, you have more of a possibility of a good outcome. So combined with playing the Coyotes at home, you have the support of the crowd. You've got a well-rested team, and the fact that they think that he's been ready for a little while now. It's not just that he woke up this morning and said, "Okay, I can play." That Corey Crawford, who's in charge of his timeline, said, "Okay, you know, we're ready to go. Let's look at this date." Every day they're looking at him, saying, "How's practice going?" And he seems ready. You know, it's interesting. You know, obviously he had a concussion, which was the problem with him. And concussions, it's not a linear thing. You don't put 4 to 6 weeks in a concussion. And in practice today, Cam Ward took a shot right off the head from I think it was John Hayden, and you saw him shaking his head, just trying to get rid of it. And you know, those are the kind of things that can happen in practice, that can happen during a game. And you know, if Corey Crawford's able to, you know, deal with that and still come out of it feeling okay, then I think they'll feel comfortable. And that's going to happen, whether it's in the first game or a second game back. And, you know, he's probably somebody who's going to have to deal with some of those pretty soon, and we'll find out if he can handle it.
Jimmy, I remember when the Blackhawks traded back for Brandon Saad, training Artemi Panarin, and they said that they're bringing Saad back to kind of jumpstart Jonathan Toews' offensive game. A lot was made of the two of them playing together. Well, Brandon Saad is nowhere near Jonathan Toews' line right now, and Jonathan Toews seems to have refound that scoring touch. What's going so well for Captain Sirius? And from an outsider's perspective, like we are here in Winnipeg, what does Brandon Saad need to do to, you know, presumably get out of the doghouse of Joel Quenneville?
Well, to begin with Toews, he had a summer where he committed himself to getting ready for the season. He's a proud guy. He's not young anymore. He's 30 years old. Maybe it's young to some people. It's not to me for sure. I don't think it is to him. And he came into the off season thinking, "I'm going to get healthy. I'm going to get ready, and I'm going to come in and be the best player I can be." And he's done that. it certainly has helped that they've found a line for him that is producing, led by him, but producing. He's got Alex DeBrincat, who's really turning into a star. He's got I forget if it's 5 or 6 goals already this season, but he's playing like an all-star player. And the other wing on the line, Dominic Cahoon, is a rookie from Germany who's 23, so he's not a kid, but he's somebody who's been fast enough and skilled enough to succeed on this line with those two players. So, the days of Brandon Saad being the guy to be pair up with Taves are gone for now, certainly. And we're waiting to find out if Saad is going to be a scratch tomorrow. You know, he was moved to the fourth line for the last game against the Blues. And then earlier this week, he was wearing the white jersey in practice to indicate that he wouldn't be among the top 12 forwards. Today, Quenneville kind of hinted that maybe he might play. That might kind of play into his goal to maybe put some kind of a jolt into Saad's game to scare him into thinking that he wouldn't be playing. There's not much benefit to having him not play. He's clearly one of the best 12 forwards on the team. But whether or not they're getting enough out of him is really the question.
Jimmy Greenfield is our guest on NHL This Week. We're talking about the Chicago Blackhawks off to a surprising start to the season thus far. Jimmy, you mentioned the Arizona Coyotes are coming to town. That means that Nicklas Chalmerson returns to the United Center as a member of the Coyotes after so many years of success with the Blackhawks. Hindsight being 2020, now that it's been over a year since that deal happened, any regret, do you think, on the side of the Blackhawks for making that trade?
I don't know if they would call it regrets. You know, the reason for it, I think, was suspect even at the time. You know, Connor Murphy had more years in his contract. He was younger, but he was not, I don't think he was at the time considered the kind of defenseman that Nicklas Hjalmarsson was. And even though Nicklas Hjalmarsson had an off year last year due mainly to injuries, Connor Murphy didn't have the kind of year where you're thinking, oh, well, this was a good trade for us. And now Connor Murphy is hurt. He's not expected back until November at the earliest. So, the concept behind the trade made some sense. Get younger, get more years. It's kind of the same idea with the Panarin side trade, which isn't really working out right now. I don't know if Stan Bowman thinks in terms of regret, but, it's a trade that certainly has not worked out for the Hawks.
Sticking with the defenseman, Brandon Davidson's a player that the Blackhawks signed in late September, and Davidson is a defenseman that's bounced around from team to team, Edmonton and Montreal. Are you surprised that he hasn't got into a game? And I guess if he does get into the game, whether it's tomorrow night or in one of the next few games, who's the defenseman that comes out of the lineup? Would you expect it to be Jan Ruda?
I would. I am a little surprised he hasn't gotten in because he's a hard worker. You get the sense that Quenneville does like him, not only as a player, and you guys know him there. You guys know him a little bit. I would guess he's been a good player around, but it's good to have veteran defensemen who you can do this to. I think they're still trying to figure out what they have in Ruda, so having him play is the wise thing to do right now. But as they get deeper into the season and really the goal becomes solely to win games and not to figure out who you have in players, maybe he gets in there. The other issue with the Hawks is besides Murphy maybe coming back, they're going to have Gustav Forsling come back within probably a couple weeks. And once that happens, it pushes somebody else further down the depth chart. And that could be Davidson as well.
Jimmy, the Hawks sitting tied for second in the Central now with Colorado, 8 points. Is the rest of the NHL just going to kind of look at the Blackhawks and say, well, if we want to turn our seasons around, all we have to do is start practicing with mannequins?
Yeah, those were funny. Ulf Samuelsson was the one who kind of brought those in. I guess he used them in with the Rangers as well, or one of his previous places where he played. The first day they brought out one mannequin, we all laughed, and the next time they brought out two, and now we're just kind of like, okay, the story's over, but it just seems typical that they're out there instead of being unusual. I think the rest of the NHL has taken notice of the Blackhawks being a team to at least be aware of, because the track record for them in the last 10 years is almost all good. And last year is beginning to look more like a fluke than the future of the team. So I don't think anyone's going to take them lightly. If they are, that's dumb. You know, this is a team with some really good players who have shown they know how to win and are not happy with the way things turned out last year. Joel Quenneville is the second winningest coach in NHL history. He has 3 Stanley Cups. He was not happy with the way things turned out last year. I would expect that teams are, even if they're going to beat the Hawks, because the Hawks still, you know, have some talent issues, they're never going to stop playing hard, and I think that they're in as good a condition as any team in the NHL right now.
Last question for you, Jimmy, and we appreciate your time and your insight on this Wednesday evening. You know, when you talk about the Blackhawks' back end, you're usually talking about Keith and Seabrook, but there's a rookie defenseman who's making a big impact. That's Henry Jokiharju, and I think I got that right. Obviously, a 2017 first-round pick of the Blackhawks, 5 points in his first 5 NHL games. Why has he been able to make, thus far at least, a seamless transition to the pro game?
He has a confidence that's far beyond his years. He's a very mellow guy. He fits in well into the locker room. Not only has he been scoring, but he's on the power play now. He's had more ice time, at least one game, than Duncan Keith has, which is a remarkable thing for a guy who sometimes would have 30 minutes a game. I think every good team has to have some surprises, and nobody thought that the 19-year-old rookie would be this good this quickly. You know, when Forsling was hurt in the summer, we thought, oh, well, this will kind of give Jokiharju a chance to make the team. And instead, he's, I think, clearly been the second best defenseman, or possibly even the first defenseman, if you put him out of Keith, in the early going. So that's remarkable. You know, he sees the ice well. He has great instincts. He's not making a lot of dumb rookie mistakes. He's able to, you know, push really fast forwards off the play and, allow the team to trust him. You know, Quenneville he put him on the power play in the 4th game. And for that to happen with a rookie was a remarkable thing because, Joe Quenneville is sort of notorious for not really trusting young players. And he really has an amazing amount of trust in Jokiharju.
Jimmy Greenfield covers the Chicago Blackhawks for the Chicago Tribune. Jimmy, appreciate your time and insight on this Wednesday evening. Thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime, guys.
Take care. When we come back, a number of things have surprised Ezzy and Sean through the first 2.5-3 weeks of this NHL season. They'll tell us all about it coming up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
20 minutes after the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. It's Wednesday evening, you're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom. That's at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. As I mentioned, we're about 3 weeks into the 2018-19 regular season, and for both Sean and Ezzy, there's been some things that have surprised them.
I'm shocked.
Hey, I'm surprised.
Surprised.
To be honest with you, I'm surprised.
Surprising thing number one, Mr. Ezra Ginsberg, you are surprised that through 5 games, I don't blame you for being surprised about this one, the Arizona Coyotes have not scored a 5-on-5 even strength goal.
I realize that the Coyotes are dealing with some injuries right now, and Alex Galchenyuk is the biggest one. You know, he's their number one center. Christian Dvorak is also usually their number 3 center. So I realize that, you know, they have a few injuries, but through 5 games, they don't have one even-strength goal.
That's hard to do.
I mean, that is very hard to do. Yeah. And I realize they've run into some hot goaltenders. They've played Jordan Gibson a couple of times. John Gibson had a shutout But they played Buffalo and Linus Allmark, shut them out. They played Minnesota recently. They lost to Minnesota. Devin Dubnyk had a really strong performance. So they've played some decent teams with excellent goaltending, but no even strength goals in five games. Just think about that for a second. And you're looking up and down this roster. You know, Clayton Keller has no goals. Richard Panik has no goals. Michael Grabner, no goals. They only have three players with goals. Brad Richardson, Brendan Perlini, and Dylan Strome.
They only have four goals as a team through the first five games, so they've all come not in five-on-five situations. But it's difficult to be that woeful. In fact, it's historical. They have three goals. Four goals. Pardon me, you're right. Four goals, that includes the shootout winner, because they do have one win. But it's three goals in real hockey, and then they're credited with one goal for the shootout winner. So you're right. It's three goals in five games.
Like Derek Stepan, no goals. Christian Fischer, no goals.
It's a historic.
Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I mean, three goals in five games.
It's a historically bad start for the Coyotes and their offense, and it's certainly proven. And, of course, the Jets will see them on Saturday afternoon. So we'll see if they're able to snap out of that before they face the Jets on Saturday. They go to Chicago to play the Blackhawks on Thursday night. Sean, Sidney Crosby has no goals. Speaking of players that are on the schneid so far, Sidney Crosby of the Pittsburgh Penguins, I think now after watching Connor McDavid last night, the second best player in the NHL is still looking for his first goal on the season.
Yeah, the Penguins are scoring goals, you know. Playing Montreal twice, Capitals, Sidney Crosby usually gets up to play the Capitals. You know, they played Vegas, they played Vancouver yesterday. Crosby has had a plethora of chances, a one-on-one breakaway with Antti Niemi. You expect Sidney Crosby to score, but Sidney, no goals so far this season. I mean, William Karlsson had his first goal yesterday. That's surprising in itself, but it's pretty shocking. He's still putting up the assists, but Sidney's been, he's been known to snipe them, but he's a player that, when he gets hot and he gets that scoring touch, look out, he usually takes off and not worried, just surprised.
Surprised is allowed to be, worried not allowed in this segment. Ezra, we just talked about the Chicago Blackhawks. They've yet to lose a game in regulation, 3-0-2, and all five of their games this season have gone to overtime. No NHL team has done that since 1983-84 when overtime was introduced to the league.
It's remarkable. I mean, how can you not be surprised by that? I mean, sure, be surprised by the Blackhawks getting off to this good start, but all five games going to overtime, you just mentioned it. Since overtime was introduced, this has never happened. And to start a season, I mean, every single game going to overtime and you at least getting a point in all five of these games, it's incredible. And surprising.
Both incredible and surprising. Indeed it is. That's why it's called I'm Surprised. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're talking about surprising things so far through the first few weeks of the NHL season. Your radio's tuned to TSN Radio 1290. Sean Assor, you were surprised by the speed and tenacity. Tenacity, not truculence. Tenacity.
No.
Of the Carolina Hurricanes.
We sat here for our season preview show, and I looked at that roster of the Carolina Hurricanes, and I just kind of shook my head as to even thinking how they would compete in the NHL. Well, Rob Brind'Amour just slapped me across the face because they are as tenacious, fast, and well-coached a team that you could watch. The amount of shots they're able to generate on net, we saw it here on Sunday. They threw 43 shots at, Lauren Brossoit. The stick checks, the positioning, their way to disrupt the flow of their opponent was so impressive. I was shocked at how prepared and almost veteran-like they looked. And also, Andrei Svechnikov is an 18-year-old tank. That kid is a beast.
He certainly can play the game.
So that's surprising.
There you go. Ezra Ginsberg, you are surprised that the Los Angeles Kings still have not scored a power play goal on the season.
They're 0-21. And first off, we should mention Dustin Brown has been injured early on this season.
The net front presence of Dustin Brown.
He had 15 power play points, but no, let me just go over the top two power play units for the Los Angeles Kings, because they have talent. I mean, you expect Anje Kopitar to be out there. Drew Doughty is out there. This is the first power play unit, obviously. Jeff Carter, Ilya Kovalchuk. Rookie Jared Anderson Dolan has been out there on the first power play. Kopitar, Carter, Doughty, Kovalchuk, no power play goals. Second unit, Tanner Pearson, Tyler Toffoli, Mike Amadeo, Dion Phaneuf, Alec Martinez. Sure, that second power play unit isn't as sexy as that first power play unit, Drew, but zero goals in five games. It's incredible. And very surprising.
Last one in this segment where we're talking about things that are surprising us. Sean Assor, you are surprised at the hot start to the season for the Anaheim Ducks, despite their limited roster due to injuries.
Yeah, I mean, before the season fired up, all we got was Corey Perry out long-term, and then Ryan Getzlaf goes down. Will Ryan Kessler be able to maintain a healthy status for the remainder of the season? Well, the Anaheim Ducks are 4-1-1. Jakob Silverberg leading the team with 7 points. He's a stud. Hampus Lindholm from the back end, 1 goal, 5 assists. And then Max Comtois, a youngster, putting up some points early. This team is showing it's got more than just Perry Getzlaf. There's some legitimate talent surrounding the aging veterans, I would say, and Anaheim Ducks looking pretty solid at the top of their division.
And Shawnee, we should mention Bob McKenzie reported yesterday that it looks like Nick Ritchie is close to signing.
Yep.
I'm surprised that Nick Ritchie is still without a contract.
Yeah, can we talk? That's a separate part, but yeah. Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you guys this.
Well, I would throw Nylander in there, too.
I know, I'm kidding.
Are we really talking about Kyle Dubas going to Switzerland for this neutral site meeting?
Switzerland?
Maybe he enjoys the chocolate. Or the sort
needed
of cheese.
A new watch?
I don't know. Maybe needed, yeah, you know, they could need a new watch. I mean, I'm surprised that they haven't dispatched, like, you know, the TSN and Sportsnet haven't dispatched people to Switzerland for live on location coverage of the meeting, you know, but God forbid they do that.
They're just skiing, eating chocolate and cheese, wearing their fancy watches.
That's apparently all you can do.
What a great time that sounds like.
Which of the six things you guys identified? I'm putting you on the spot here.
Cool.
Which of the six things that you guys identified respectively is the most surprising?
The Coyotes with no even strength goals. It's not like it's one game or two games. 5 games, 3 goals, none of them are even strength. That has to be some type of record.
It is a record of futility. That's true. So that's Ezzy's vote for the most surprising, Sean.
Yeah, that's pretty surprising.
Okay, it's unanimous then. The Coyotes.
The Kings not scoring a power play goal is pretty bad too.
We saw the Kings, though. That's not that surprising.
Yeah, the Coyotes. That's the winner already. We'll see how that if they're able to rectify their problem when they visit the Jets on Saturday. Again, it's an afternoon affair game. You can of course hear on TSN 1290, and you can watch on TSN 3 on Saturday afternoon. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts our game day coverage on Saturday at 9 a.m. When we come back, we're going to hashtag get in one with Mike Commodore, former NHL player. He's always an entertaining interview. Mike Commodore up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. It's time for us to hashtag get in one. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy, always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
When we need to get in one, there's only one man we call, and that's, of course, Mike Commodore. Mike, good evening, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me, fellas. How's it going?
Going well, Mike. How about yourself? October 17th, a monumental day in Canada here. Did you celebrate at all? Is that your thing at all?
You know what? It is my thing, like, a little bit. I'm going to work on it being a little bit more. I would actually like to do that a little bit more and maybe hit the sauce a little bit less. But yeah, I'm big day. I didn't go stand in line or anything like that, but I've been looking into it. It's kind of interesting, some of that stuff, to be honest.
It's very interesting. You know, obviously the NHL sort of has a lenient approach to it. We've been hearing about that in the lead up to today. Do you think this is going to change players and maybe how they interact with it in the dressing room or how they interact with it in their spare time as opposed to tipping a few back and all the hangovers that might come with that?
Yeah. You know what? It is interesting. There's some former players like Riley Cote comes to mind and some other guys that are doing some stuff and like educating themselves, and I'm not the most educated on it at all, so I'm not a great source for this. But, you know, I mean, to be honest, I don't think a whole lot is going to change. But as far as guys, I think personally from what I've seen is with the cannabis stuff and what I've read a little bit about it, I actually think there's a lot of value to it. And, like, especially with the, you know, the CBD part of it, with, like, the anti-inflammation, anti-inflammatories, and stuff that I've read about, like, I mean, those MMA fighters and guys like that, like, I see those guys, these guys swear by it. These guys get beat up maybe worse than anybody else in any other sport, at least to a point, and they swear by it. So, honestly, I really think there is some value to it. I think the big thing is I only said cannabis once, and now it's legal. Like, when I first started talking about it, I'm talking about it. I think it's, like, big part of it is just going to be getting rid of the stigma. I don't think... It's not illegal to smoke marijuana and play in the NHL. Like, that's not, when they do drug testing, that's not something. You could smoke a joint right before you did the test if you wanted to. And that goes back since the testing started. It doesn't matter. They're looking for performance-enhancing drugs, and marijuana isn't considered to be one. But, yeah, it'd be interesting moving forward if they, you know, as far as in the training room and using some of the oils and stuff like that, I find it pretty interesting.
It's a bizarre situation, Mike, that I can start an interview by asking you if you bought cannabis today and it not be the most offensive question and lead to a dial tone on the other end. So we're all a little bit through the looking glass here. Mike Commodore, our guest here on NHL This Week.
Mike, you live in Calgary, so we have to ask you about the Flames. They have a big game tonight against the Boston Bruins. They're off to a pretty good start. They're 3-2 in five games. Four of those games, of course, have been on the road. Tonight's game is in Calgary at the Saddle Dome. What have you thought of the Flames so far? The new-look Flames with James Neal and Elias Lindholm and Noah Hanifin. It's a much different-looking team than last year.
Yeah, I mean, like every other team, it is early, so who knows. But for the first five games, I would say, you know, record-wise, 3-2 with having that's pretty good. If I would have, I don't know if I would have thought they would be 3-2 after those first five games with four of them being on the road and going to Nashville and stuff like that. They've looked pretty good. I know they've juggled the lines around quite a bit. As far as my boy, the real deal, he's still finding his way a little bit. I know the lines are moving around. I think any forward on the team wants to play with Monahan and Gaudreau. I think that's how you're going to get paid the big bucks, because you're going to put up some numbers with those two, but not everybody can play with them. So they've been moving the lines around a little bit, and I think they've been playing pretty well. Defensively, they've been all right, I think. The decor has been okay. You know, they lost Hamonic right away there with that fight. He kind of got cracked there by Gudbrandsson. Goaltending's been okay. Smith, his numbers aren't great, but there have been some pretty, you know, he had a tough game in St. Louis, and so five games in, if you have one tough game, your numbers are going to look terrible. But that Rittich came in last game. I mean, it was 2-0 Colorado in Colorado. I think it was on Saturday night. And honestly, to be honest, I stopped watching for a long time. I'm like, this game's over. If I'm being totally honest, I put a little money on the Flames. And so I wasn't very excited. And then I guess the last two periods, they played great, won an OT. So overall, I'd say everybody's pretty happy.
Mike, I'm curious about a comment that Jets forward Andrew Copp made today. I mean, you know, the Jets blew that lead to the Oilers last night and suffered that overtime loss. And they asked Andrew Copp about it today, and he said there hasn't been as much talking on the bench between the players. Not so much in just a methodical, you know, strategic kind of way, but even just in like a friendly, jovial way. There hasn't been as much this year as there was last year when the Jets were obviously as successful as they were. Is there cause for concern there for Jets fans, or is that just something that they just kind of work out at the beginning of the season and they get their mojo back and it's all good?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, I wouldn't worry about, didn't the Jets get off to not the greatest start last year and then they torched the world?
Yeah,
I remember coming on here a year ago and the start wasn't great, and then next thing I knew they were the best team in the league almost.
Yeah,
I wouldn't worry about it too much. I mean, obviously you want guys to be loose. I mean, how many new guys do they have on their team? I'm going through their roster right now. There's probably a couple new guys in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or are they all the same?
No, they got about three new guys. Christian Vasilainen, who's a rookie. Jack Roslovic, who's a rookie. They got some new guys who are playing more prominent roles than they lost a lot of veterans as opposed to last year, as Paul Maurice sort of addressed earlier this week.
Okay. So, I mean, you got some new guys on the bench, obviously. Most of those guys aren't going to come in and run their mouths and be, you know, I mean, I'm sure they're a little nervous. It's a new team for them, a new start. I wouldn't be too concerned over that. I'm sure if Winnipeg has a good team. You guys should be just fine. I wouldn't be concerned at all.
I don't love
you guys blowing that lead against the Oilers, though.
Yeah.
But I guess it's pretty much blowing it against Connor McDavid. So that happens to a lot of teams.
Mike Commodore, our guest on NHL this week. And Mike, sort of along the same lines to Sean's question, you know, the weight of expectations. I mean, a lot of teams, when you don't have any expectations on you, you can come in and you can surprise the world. And then the next year, like they are here in Winnipeg, you know, after coming off a conference final, how much more difficult is it for a team and for players individually to play with expectations on their shoulders?
Yeah, I think a lot depends on the individual. I think a lot of the success, I think, would rest this year. I mean, maybe a little bit more so than a year when there is no expectations on the leaders on the Jets. I mean, it's going to be up to them to kind of get guys moving in the right direction. Don't worry about the expectations, just play. But it definitely can affect you. If you're going out on the ice and you're like, God, I better play well, or I need to score, I need to do this, or, you know, I'm supposed to be doing this. If that's how you're thinking, I don't think you're going to be as successful if you just go out there and play. I mean, you got a good team, just go out there and play. Don't worry about the rest of it. It should take care of itself. I definitely think it could be an issue. I mean, as far as my career, the only thing I can kind of go off, I guess I could kind of go off two situations. One, when we won in Carolina. I know the Jets didn't win last year, but you still went very, very far.
Mm-hmm.
When we won in Carolina the next year, you know, we didn't catch anybody surprised. Like, the Jets aren't going to catch anybody surprised this year. Everybody knows they're good. So that plays a little bit of a part into it. And then there was obviously expectations. We ended up missing the playoffs. Another example for us, kind of when I was in Columbus, we made the playoffs for the first time my first year. The expectations went up. Everybody was just pumped we made the playoffs. We got swept in four games in the first round, but it really didn't matter. And then the next year, but there were other things that went into that too, injuries and stuff like that. But I think it's definitely something that the leadership group, whoever, you know, Wheeler and these guys, definitely need to stay on top of, if that makes sense.
Mike, what did you make of the two-game suspension to Panthers defenseman Mike Matheson for his hit on Elias Pettersson? Did you think that was fair, or, you know, were you surprised that he got the two games?
Being totally honest, and I know those guys have a tough job, there's no doubt about it. I thought the group with Perros and Whitney and those guys, I thought they, from the suspensions that I've seen over the last year and a bit, I think they've done a good job. I agreed with the Tom Wilson one at 20 games. This one, though, I do not agree with. I think it went from, look, was it maybe a little bit over the top? Okay, did he have to shove him? No. Okay, he probably didn't have to. But, you know, he got kind of lit up a little bit, and he was maybe a little bit mad. I don't think it was worth two games. I think this is the first time, at least that I can remember, where the suspension was kind of due to the name on the Vancouver Canucks guy's back, not just of the actual play that happened. I think if that would have happened to anybody else in the Canucks, I don't even think we're talking about it. I just think because of the start that kid's had, and he's a little bit slighter and stuff like that, I think that kind of played into it, and I don't think that's right, personally. I think that, you know what, it's not, I didn't think it was a dirty play, personally, and I don't think it's, when the NHL player safety is looking at a play, they're not supposed to look at who's, I mean, they're not supposed to take who with the play, who the hit or whatever happened to. It's not supposed to really play into it. What I'm trying to say is I don't think it's the player safety's job to take care of the young stars in the league. I think that's up to the team. I don't think it's up to the player safety. So I don't know. I just think from that play, I just think you're kind of like, what's going to happen tonight if Johnny Gaudreau kind of gets dumped a little bit and, you know, maybe it's a little late or something like that. I'm not talking about like a blindside hit, but what happens if, you know, stick goes in between his legs and somebody drops him, he's down for a little bit. I mean, is that a suspension? I mean, I don't think so, but now you're kind of, it can be a slippery slope. Does that make any sense? It
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I probably didn't explain it great, but yeah, I didn't like that one. I like the rest of the stuff they've done, but I just don't think that warranted it. I really don't. And that it's, you don't, yeah, I don't want to see guys get hurt. And obviously, the best players in the game, they need to be playing. But at the same time, the best players in the game, they need to take care of themselves out there also. I'm not talking about dirty, dirty plays. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about something like that happened with Florida there. You have to take care of yourself, and your team has to take care of you. And I don't know. That's my feeling on it, if that makes sense.
What do you think about the Canucks' lack of response? That was a big thing in Vancouver. The team won the game. You would think they would have lost the game based on the reaction in Vancouver, how nobody apparently jumped in to maul Matheson. Did you have a problem with the lack of response from the Canucks players?
You know, did any of them see it?
They said not.
That's one thing. Yeah, so I don't know. Like, if nobody saw it, then I don't really know how. I mean, that kind of stuff of people jumping in, I mean, that's supposed to be kind of the stuff that's going away in the NHL. I mean, if nobody saw what happened, I would assume if somebody would have seen, they would have done something. But if nobody saw it, and it was kind of, I don't know, it was kind of a weird play, to be honest with you. Yes, it was a little late. Yes, it was a little over the top. But I don't think it was egregious. I don't think there was an intent to injure. Like, if I, for instance, when I played against Pavel Datsyuk when I was in Columbus, that guy lit me up all the time. he would drag the puck through my legs and go around me, I'd be pissed off. I mean, I'm like, oh, I look bad out here. Jesus, this is the NHL. I got, you know, and if I would get a chance to hit him, I wouldn't try and hit him, like, dirty, but I would try and hit him a little bit harder. Now, Pavel Datsyuk knew how to take care of himself, and when I would go to hit him, he'd either walk around me again or he would give me the cold shoulder and I'd be on my back. So I stopped doing that, too. I just accepted the fact that I wasn't on his level. But, he's a young kid. He's really fun to watch in the first 5-6 games, whatever he's played. Hopefully he's not hurt too bad. Hopefully he learns from this. And he has to realize that, look, if you're going to dance around guys and you're going to be a really good player in this league, you have to be able to take care of yourself a little bit too. And I'm not talking about fighting, obviously. I'm not talking about anything like that. You just have to take care of yourself, know where you are on the ice and know where everybody else is. And if somebody comes to dump you a little late, I mean, grab onto them a little bit or do something instead of just, you know, I mean, it just kind of looked like he just kind of stood there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Mike,
so,
you know,
anyways.
You know, when people think about you and your playing days, a lot of people will think to the red fro and just the great mane of hair you had. And I'm curious, from one redhead to another, what are your thoughts on one redhead who's taking the NHL by storm this year, Gritty?
Gritty. Gritty. I got to be honest, actually, when I first saw it on Twitter, it popped up on my feed when they announced it. I started laughing. I actually, to be honest, I think it's pretty funny. I do. I like that kind of stuff. I think I especially like the mascot stuff. I think that's funny. I think fans get into that. I think it's been fantastic. I've seen him on, like, he did a little Barstool pizza review, which Barstool Sports does all the time. I thought that was funny. I think Philly's done a really good job with it. I haven't seen him a whole lot in the last few days, I guess. I need to watch some more Flyers games. But I think that stuff's fun. I think it's great for fans. I'm sure kids love it, unless Gritty scares kids, which is possible too. But I'm sure by and large everybody enjoyed it.
Mike Commodore joins us here on NHL This Week. Mike, we always appreciate your time and your unique take on things. Thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks a lot for having me, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Mike. When we come back, one final segment, we talk about the future of Jeff Blashill in Detroit. The Red Wings certainly struggling to start the year, and there's chatter that a coaching change might be afoot. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Wednesday evening. It's brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. This weekend at Rumors, he starts tomorrow night. If you're looking to laugh, Eric Griffin in town. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. And, of course, next week, Norm MacDonald. 8 sold-out shows for Norm MacDonald starting next Thursday.
What about the old ball coach?
The old ball coach, yes, Ben Walker. I mean, the show's already started tonight. So, Ben Walker, if you happen to be going back in time and listening to the show, Ben Walker is at Rumors tonight and was there last night as well.
He's hilarious. I've seen him do stand-up around the city many times.
Yeah, Ben.
He's awesome.
Very funny. I got to tell you, boys, that was the first time I've ever asked a guest when we had Mike Commodore on last segment. That was the first time I've ever asked a guest if he bought weed earlier today. I mean, that's sort of a legitimate question.
It's legal now. We're going to be talking about it a lot more.
You worded it perfectly because you said, it's the first time I've asked a question without the dial tone instantly. Because, yeah, normally, we just be, what? What show did I come on? Yeah.
What kind of amateur hour did I agree to join? And now I can ask that question, and that's the amateur hour that he's on.
We'll ask Darren Dreger next.
No. But it's bizarre. Anyways, we're through the looking glass here. I mean, it's sort of funny. You know, I was thinking about it earlier today. You know, you and I both have kids and everything else. And, you know, when we were growing up, you know, it was, you know, talk to your kids about drugs and make sure they don't do drugs and everything else. Now our daughters, Ezzy and my son as well, are going to grow up in a society where it's normal.
Well, you should still have that talk about not doing drugs.
Of course you're going to have that talk. I mean, don't get me wrong. But
Drew, is this the last segment of NHL this week, or is this parenting story time with Drew?
Is it not a little bit bizarre, though? I mean, come on. I think it's great.
It's weird.
Pot should have been legal years ago.
Agreed.
The original Trudeau tried to make it legal, by the way.
Pierre Elliott? Yep. Or was there a different Trudeau before that?
No, there was only one Trudeau.
Anyways, it's just a bit bizarre is what my point was there. That
You could say it's bizarre. I think it's long overdue.
Oh, I agree it's long overdue. I'm not saying that. I just think the conversations that we're going to end up having with our kids as a result of it now being legalized, it makes it a little bit more bizarre. Could have been the conversations that we had as teenagers or with our parents about it when it was against the law to have cannabis and have marijuana, and now it's not going to be against the law.
Right, let's wrap up parenting time with Drew.
You don't let me have any fun anymore. Okay, Jeff Blashill, the Detroit Red Wings, they're 0-4-2.
Send them some legal weed.
Well, they've given up 30 goals in
maybe,
six.
Maybe they should spark up.
Help them forget about the start of the season.
They've given up 30 goals in six games. They're pretty bad. I mean, certainly one of the worst teams in the league thus far. Is there any end in sight to this Red Wings team, or is this going to be a bad team all year long? And for all the chatter about replacing Jeff Blashill, is it going to make any difference?
Well, first of all, I think Jeff Blashill is an excellent coach. I think, if you look at what he did with the Grand Rapids Griffins, I mean, he was the heir apparent once Mike Babcock moved to Toronto. And Jeff Blashill is a very well-respected hockey coach. I mean, there's only so much he can do. I'm not saying it hasn't been a disappointing start to the season. I personally didn't think the Detroit Red Wings were going to be very good this year. And you look at the division they play in, the Atlantic Division, you've got Toronto, you've got Boston, you've got Tampa Bay. I mean, did anybody actually think the Red Wings were going to be a top three team or a top four team in their division? So
clearly not.
We talked about, yes, I'm surprised the Devils are 4-0. I'm surprised the Blackhawks are undefeated. I'm not surprised that the Wings aren't doing well. And Henrik Zetterberg, you can say whatever you want. He's a future Hall of Famer. And not having Zetterberg on this team hurts them big time. Because this is a very young team, right? And, guys like Anthony Mantha and Dylan Larkin, I mean, the last couple of years, they've really taken over the team. But after three or four players, I mean, you look at, and Thomas Vanek, he scored his first NHL goal recently. I mean, there's not a lot of talent up and down that roster, and they've brought in, some young players there. I actually really like Tyler Bertuzzi, but it's just not a very good team. As far as Jeff Blashill goes, I think that Ken Holland knew this team wasn't going to be very good this year. I mean, maybe you guys disagree, but when you look at the young players they have in their lineup, I mean, Mike Green and Thomas Vanek were their only really big signings. I mean, it's littered with young players. So I don't think the expectations were very high. So I don't think anything's changed there with Blashill.
Dan Bylsma is there as an assistant coach. Mm. If they were to replace Blashill with Bylsma, who's just sitting there, does it make a difference? I mean, is anybody going to get anything out of this team right now, given the roster isn't very good?
Why'd you just take my pen there?
I was just holding on to it for a second.
A security pen?
The roster isn't very good. The defense is banged up. I mean, is there any reason to even bother with a coaching change?
Maybe just as a scapegoat. Someone has to take the fall for if things start to compound and this thing snowballs into an abysmal season.
Well, their goals against average is 5 through the first 6 games of the year.
That's terrible.
I would just suggest that they've already snowballed to some extent.
But yeah, just reports out of Detroit and reading some of the articles that are coming out of there is that some other vets like Gustav Nyquist, Justin Abdelkader, Franz Nielsen all need to be better. And there's even word that They've seen regression out of Anthony Mantha. That is a word you never want to hear when it comes to an up-and-coming star of your team.
Well, and he's only 22 years old.
He's a young kid, and right? You know, he's a big boy, so he's working into his body and he's growing into a man's game. But with Dan Bylsma there, and Dan Bylsma signing a three-year deal, and Jeff Blashill on the last year of his contract, I mean, the writing could be in the tea leaves if they can just, you know, need to blame someone. They fire Jeff Blashill and hand the reins over to Dan Bylsma, who did some good things with Pittsburgh when he stepped into the head coaching position.
Yeah, but he wasn't very good in Buffalo with a young team.
Correct.
So, you know, so you got that to think back on. I mean, you look at the injuries on the back end for the Red Wings in particular. So they're without Mike Green. They're without Danny DeKeyser. They're without Jonathan Erickson. They're without Trevor Daley. I mean, they have a defense right now that's out there that I haven't heard. Besides Nicholas Cronwall, who has certainly lost a step.
Well, Cronwall doesn't have that many more years in the NHL.
That's what I'm saying.
Right? I mean, he's leading a very young group there. You know, Dennis Cholowski is one of the players I was mentioning. He's a former first-round pick from a couple of years ago of the Red Wings. I mean, when you're starting, you know, 19 and 20-year-old players in significant roles, Philip Hronek is another guy. He's actually had a good start to the season. But, I mean, this is a very young Red Wings team. And, Drew, probably the most concerning thing to me is that the Wings are one of the worst teams in the league. And if you look at where they are cap-wise, they're actually pretty close to the cap ceiling. I mean, there's some pretty bad contracts there when you look at guys like, I would put Gustav Nyquist in there. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, you could argue what you think about the Thomas Vanek contract, but I didn't think this was going to be a good team, so I don't think a coaching change is imminent.
Not surprised.
That's it for this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. A big thank you to all of our guests for joining us, Jimmy Greenfield, Mike Commodore, and Patrick Johnston. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca, on illegalcurve.com, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Get it sent to you automatically. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Chris Curry. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel.
Just Blaze.
Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck, and thanks for listening to TSN Radio 1290.